Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So, Brandon, we'll certainly talk about the CM Punk announcement, officially announced now for the June 17th Saturday Collision debut. But first, I want to just kind of do an overview of Dynamite tonight and give a thumbs up with a couple qualifications to the idea that they followed up on the pay-per-view well and the major happenings on the show, and, you know, emphasized the major beats that came out and the developments that came out of the pay-per-view weave throughout the show. And I think that's important to do if you're in the pay-per-view business, which AEW is, where you're trying to earn buys. But you should also reinforce that it was a good decision. You know, it's like if you ever check out at a store and you buy, like, some clothes and the clerk is trained to say, good choices, and make you feel good about your purchase, even after you ran the credit card. And I thought AEW did a good, not great job, but good job, a good solid job on that. Did that cross your mind tonight, or as I bring it up, do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, it did, in the sense that I think it's funny. I was not particularly high on Double or Nothing. I think my views fell more or less in line, I think, with what you and Rich and Todd talked about on the VIP, the post-show roundtable. I felt like it was a middle of the road to thumbs down show up until the final two matches. And even though I still have some qualifications and reservations about those two matches, I think they were both good enough to elevate it to a point where it didn't feel like a huge letdown. And so I kind of came into tonight's Dynamite expecting more of the same in a way, because I am someone who has not enjoyed the weekly Dynamite product at all in recent months, and I usually get, you know, my positive AEW fix from the pay-per-view. So I kind of came in tonight with a bit of a negative connotation coming in, just because I thought, you know, if the pay-per-view was what I felt, such a mess from you know, top until the last two matches, surely they're not going to get their ducks in a row for Dynamite, which I find usually to be quite messy. And instead I got a show that I think still showed a lot of the issues that I have with the week-to-week presentation, but one that felt like it was focused on telling stories coming out of the pay-per-view, like you said. And some are not necessarily stories that I am all the way invested in, and some are directions that I'm not all the way invested in, but I give them credit for at least not booking what could have been just a random thrown together show, which they have often done with these Dynamites. I appreciated the fact that it was a main event that they set up and booked this past Sunday on Double or Nothing, and they followed through with that. And the rest of the show was largely focused on following up.
Yeah, I liked aspects of this show, and what stood out to me is that it didn't just feel like, and this is a little bit of a dated criticism of the show going way back, but it didn't feel like, let's point a camera at the ring and you know, Tony Khan wrote some matches down on a note card, and then, you know, mm-hmm. the wrestlers just went out there and did it. Like, and I think if you have the right team in place in terms of wrestlers and producers and bookers and the company is rolling, I think you can actually get away with that. Like, I think you can literally on a 3.5x5 note card write down the first hour on one side and the second hour on the other side with some notes. You know, here's the match, here's the finish, and here's the promos. And your team should be able to go out there and actually have a pretty good show. Now, granted, in this modern era, you want to put more thought into it than that, and in the sense of having video packages and some elbow grease and pizzazz to elevate things. But this moved in the direction of that. Like, We even heard from the Young Bucks. I've been calling for that for weeks. I've been making my case that they're underutilized or that they aren't challenging themselves enough or being challenged enough. And we heard from them, and we had they addressed the Dark Order situation. Like it or not, and I have mixed feelings about it, it is a bit of a loose end having Hangman show up and realign with the Elite. So they're going to – I don't know if calling that a loose end is the right thing, but they followed up on that, and we had the women's titles followed up on. And I was fine with MJF not being here, but having a video of him, boasting afterwards was right afterwards backstage was sufficient. But at the same time, they didn't just look back 3 days to Double or Nothing. They moved forward too, and we had some storylines move forward. So this checked more of the boxes that sometimes than usual that I often find lacking in Dynamite, where sometimes it feels like, okay, the pay-per-view's over, we got your money, and now we're going to turn the page and just give you a bunch of high spot matches and kind of recalibrate. And within a few weeks, we'll get a few other storylines going. I also thought it was a smart main event because they got something extra out of the Cole Jericho feud, and actually something better in a way, because you had, two sets of key parties involved interacting, not just Jericho and Cole. So those are some of my thoughts. No specific question to you, but I'll throw back to you for some follow up.
Yeah, I thought that the one exception to sort of one of my biggest criticisms with AEW is often the sort of random booking where it just feels like there's a match thrown together with little purpose, and it's done essentially because this will be a good wrestling match, and that's great, but when you're selling a weekly TV product, I would like some continuity there. And that's not to say, like WWE isn't guilty of this from time to time, but by and large, the matches that take place, at least in the main events of weekly TV, will often have connection to or further a story. And with AEW, that isn't always the case. So I appreciated that they did that tonight. The one exception to that, I think, was finding a way to get a team set up with Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy. And I know that they've teamed in the past before, but that felt like almost like an immediate demotion for Darby Allin to go from having a headline match on pay-per-view straight into a match against ROH Trios champions who we rarely see on AEW TV. And same thing with Jungle Boy a little bit later. Jungle Boy goes from a semi-main event or co-main event on Sunday to a decidedly lower mid-card situation with Hook. So, I mean, that was on the negative side of things in terms of the repositioning and reframing. I think you could also make the argument that that's closer to where those characters belong. But I think then you get into the idea that, like, hey, maybe the Four Pillars thing never should have been a thing in the first place. And I don't know. I mean, the match on Sunday was very good, but I still have my reservations and my doubts about how effective booking that situation is long term. But yeah, I thought that they did a good job overall of furthering stories and booking matches that made sense based on what happened on Sunday. I mean, even that triple threat early in the show, which didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense on the surface, I give them a lot of credit for tossing to clips of what happened in the Battle Royal and how those eliminations took place. Because honestly, Double or Nothing was a long show and a lot happened, especially in that Battle Royal. I didn't remember why those three wrestlers were connected, but they were. And it was nice to actually see them go back and say, hey, this is what happened, and this is why they're facing each other now.
Yes, I think that's a good point. That's some of the layering that sometimes AEW, because Tony Khan has this just top 1% memory for pro wrestling and probably for everything, it turns out to be a weakness for him. It's like this, they say the great NBA players don't make great coaches. Because one, they won, had gifts, so they maybe didn't have to work as hard. But then they worked really hard also, like top-level working hard. And those two things combined to make them the mega stars that they were, And that makes it impossible for them to – not all the time, but makes it more difficult for them to coach somebody who, A, isn't as gifted because they don't know how to teach because they had gifts, and, two, they can't tolerate people who didn't want it as bad as they did, and didn't work as hard. So sometimes it's that player who's mid-level, had a good, solid career, but had to work for everything in order to elevate their for NBA standards, average skills, and they're the ones who are able to inspire players more. So my point in that is if you have a great memory, sometimes you book for other people with great memories.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that analogy holds up. I hope it does. But the NBA one. But if you have a great memory, you just sort of assume, oh, everyone remembers everything that happened in that 4 hours. But you are more typical. I think I'm more typical, and I cover this for a living. And I'm typing up a report, but there's so much happening. And then, you know, Tony goes to bed and wakes up, thinks about this nonstop. The average fan, they get their AW fix, but they go back to other things in their lives. So even people who watch the show, it's good to recap it for them, even if it's, you know, something better than just Excalibur on commentary doing the heavy lifting. And this was a good version of that. And I want to – that's where I think Tony's next growth as a booker is going to come, is kind of slowing down his racing mind and his proclivities for, wouldn't it be cool if this international wrestler, indie star, came in and had a dream match? And wouldn't it be great if these people just did nonstop high spots and I'm just going bonkers backstage on headset and everybody remembers everything, so let's just keep the pace going. I don't want to read too much into just this show, but if I'm to pluck a theme from it, I was watching this thinking, are we seeing some growth? Are we seeing some other voices in AEW maybe take hold a little bit? And again, I don't want to make too much out of it because some of this could be happenstance and whatever, but whether it's happenstance or not, AEW's growth isn't going to come necessarily from signing a bunch of stars from WWE anymore. It's going to be getting people who watch more invested and having people only watch occasionally feel like they can tune into a random Dynamite and be sufficiently caught up. And I know people who watch every week and remember everything are like, don't cater to those people, cater to me. But I think the way for AEW to grow is to actually cater to people who are not super casual, but also not super hardcore. And I thought for people who didn't order the pay-per-view but tuned into Dynamite tonight, they didn't feel lost. And that's important.
Yeah, it's very important. And I think that, you know, WWE has had that formula down for a long time, the week-to-week continuity. It may not be always at its best. It may not always be logical. We may want a lot more out of it at times. But WWE is very good at allowing you to just pick up and come and go as you please. And sometimes I feel like I'm doing that with AEW, even though I'm not, because mm-hmm. the booking is often so scattershot. And you'll get these instances where sometimes if I missed 5 to 6 weeks of television, there are wrestlers who missed it with me. I mean, that's how scattershot things have been, and that's not the way that WWE operates, and it's not the way that I think works best for a weekly episodic television show. And I hope that the positive coming out of them getting more TV time, an extra 2 hours to play with, I hope that the positive of that is that the roster is fleshed out better, that guys are appearing consistently across the board, across these shows, because you have a lot of those original AEW talents who are just lost in the shuffle. I mean, I look even tonight, you look at a guy like Orange Cassidy, for example, and Darby Allin, who are, you know, quote unquote AEW originals. They've been featured prominently throughout. They've both gotten over to certain degrees. They're both well-known commodities within the AEW universe. And then standing opposite of them, you know, it was his affiliates facing them tonight, but he got involved after the match, is Swerve Strickland. And Swerve has got the aura of someone who feels like they should be really important to AEW, but has not yet been given a consistent platform in order to be that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really hope that the addition of Collision is not going to further hamper Tony in the sense that he's going to be spread too thin, but that the extra time allows them to actually flesh out characters and hone in on the booking.
Yes. this is an opportunity, but hopefully tonight's show and little things we can pluck from it and just some improvements over time with AEW and areas that they needed improvement it bodes well for what you're talking about.
You mentioned, though, I just want to go back for a second to, you mentioned Tony, you know, having the mind to remember everything. And it's like he's booking a show for people who remember everything. And then the flip side is Vince McMahon booking WWE for people who remember nothing. They're the polar opposites. And I wish one of them could just meet in the middle somewhere.
No, definitely. I mean, that's the thing. When you have two successful national pro wrestling companies at the level of AEW and WWE, there's going to be things that people cling to in either side in a sort of a partisan way or, you know, whatever. I mean, that's fine that people are like that to a degree, unless they're critical of other people who aren't. Then it's like, no, don't be that way. But there's going to be things, there's going to be weaknesses and contrast between the two companies where those contrasts emphasize where whoever actually moves more towards the middle first is going to have an advantage over the other. And that is absolutely one of the areas. All right, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves and set the table here for tonight's show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, May 31st, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast and Post Shows. By the way, the flagship edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast tomorrow will feature Todd Martin in a simulcast to the current events discussion of The Fix. So look for that on Thursday night. We've got a lot to talk about coming out of a big weekend. And then I will be by Friday night for the SmackDown, the follow-up to the big Bloodline developments over the weekend at Night of Champions. So big week still ahead, and I thank you for joining us here on the Dynamite Post Show. I will be, I'm planning, penciled in to host a show just like this after the first Collision. So I look forward to our Saturday night audience joining us afterwards to participate with phone calls and emails and discuss the premiere episode of that show, which will include, if all goes well for the next 17 days, Brandon, CM Punk, and we'll get to that momentarily here. But first, let me formally introduce the co-host, the voice you've heard so far in our first opening segment here, Brandon LeClaire. He is a PWTorch.com contributor, covered SmackDown for a long time. He now covers pay-per-views with reports alongside mine, does an excellent job with match details and match analysis to kind of, if you can read what I think and then bounce over to Brandon's report and see what he's saying about it and catch some details maybe I missed and vice versa. Brandon, good to have you here on the Dynamite Post Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to join on the AEW side of things. I'm usually on the WWE side, but occasionally, every few months or so, we get the AEW appearance in.
Yes, I'm glad it worked out that you could be on tonight on the post-pay-per-view Dynamite. We'd love for our listeners who are live streaming the show to be part of the program. You can do so by calling or emailing. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1, that flags you on the switchboard and lets us know you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Speaking of which, let's go to our first call of the day. Sergio in Connecticut is up. Sergio, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, guys. Hope you guys had a good night. I missed 90% of Dynamite, really. Like, I was busy, but I did catch a couple things, and the thing I did catch was the Don Callis promo with Testa. I've long said Don Callis is, like, one of my favorite personalities in wrestling. I just think he's been so underutilized in AEW. I liked when he was with Kenny Omega, but I feel like they didn't get enough juice out of that. Like, he was there, but he kind of was just lingering. He didn't really talk too much. And tonight, I feel like that promo showed, like, man, this guy could be a heat magnet. And especially for somebody like Takeshita, who, like, I think everybody who sees Takeshita sees his wrestling ability, sees he has, like, an it factor to him, but, like, is a little held back because of the promo. So having somebody like Don Callis talking for him is going to be big for him. and I think it's going to work. And also, during that promo, he kind of teased maybe more people joining. He said he's going to build a family to get rid of the Elite.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what you guys thought of the promo, because I thought it was awesome and the heat was awesome. And I love seeing Takeshita finally, you know, like after a trial run, it seemed like getting his feet firmly planted in like the storyline. But also, like, who else could you see? Because like I was thinking, like, there's so much talent in AEW, like you guys always say, that's kind of lost in the muck. So like, I, who knows? People like come to my mind right away is like Bandido, like get him away from the Best Friends, get him a mouthpiece like Don Callis, even Powerhouse Hobbs, get him as far away from QTV as possible, have him like in a group maybe with like Don Callis. Like, what do you guys think of that idea and of the promo in general?
Yeah, I have long advocated for Don Callis to not be just a guy who shows up on color commentary and says a few zingers to try to crack people up backstage and actually get in the game of being a top level heel manager, cutting money, drawing wrestler building promos. And he's capable of it at a high level. And tonight we saw a window into that. Part of my criticism of AEW is not that bad people are getting pushed too hard. That doesn't happen very often. My criticism of AEW, and I think it's sometimes I feel like I need to point this out, is that there's really talented people being underutilized. That's much more common than the wrong people being overpushed. And you know, the Young Bucks just going out having a super kick party and a 4+ star match every now and then is not utilizing them fully. I don't think they'll be great at other things, but they ought to try harder and be given the help and support that they need. And I think connect more with the audience so that they can live up to what I think it was Nick said, which is that they're, you know, the heartbeat and soul of something like that of the company. It's like, maybe, but you got to show that almost every week on TV with more than just, you know, showing up. Don Callis, same thing. Don Callis has a chance, Brandon, to be one of the reasons people tune into either Dynamite or Collision or both every week. And building a faction and elevating the people who are part of that faction is, I think, a potential. It's one of the more untapped potential acts in AEW going into the summer, and I'm looking forward to it. If he is not motivated, if he's not buoyed by that crowd response, which was nearly Dominic Mysterio level, which is hilarious to say, but also apropos, this every type of negative crowd reaction, booing, jeering, is measured on the Dominic scale in 2023. And Callis was right there with it, which actually surprised me. I didn't expect it to be at that level. I thought it'd be, you know, good, but not that good. So they have something there. And Sergio, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad that's what you were able to catch tonight. I didn't think it was a great promo. You know, all that said, I thought that we could have gotten a little bit more out of it, but you know, it's a packed show and there's only so much time. But I thought it was very good. And I think it hit the points that needed to be hit well enough. And you know, when you have the crowd, you know, jeering you that much, plus you want to give Takeshita some time to talk, and you want to unveil certain aspects of what you have planned, including what Sergio's talking about, adding members over time, then it's fine that you don't do everything all at once. Brandon, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought that the content of the promo was fine, but I thought that the segment as a whole was a little bit less about the content and more about the moment that it created with Callis having that really, really great terrible reaction. most shocking thing to me, you can very easily say that Callis got a bigger reaction than anything at Double or Nothing. I mean, any moment at Double or Nothing, take your pick, and Callis's boos were more prevalent. That's a good sign, certainly, for the heat that he's able to draw, because I think AEW is starting to have a bit of a crowd reaction problem to a lot of things. There's a lot of indifference, and I think the more that you can solidify characters firmly in a babyface or heel role and give the fans legitimate reasons to really love or hate them, you're going to get better reactions. I think a lot of what AEW does right now is dragged down a bit by the idea that it's all a show and everyone is in on the game and in on the fun. And even though these guys are playing bad guys, haha, who cares? We like them. It just doesn't, it doesn't rise to a level of interest in individual characters or the belief that the results of a match matter. It's more about, I'm watching a really good match right now, and I don't care that I'm supposed to cheer for this guy or boo that guy. And I think the more they can differentiate that and get away from it, the better off they are. So having someone like Callis, who can be a heat magnet, who can create a ton of heat for Takeshita, who got a bunch of boos tonight despite, you know, being relatively over as a babyface before, is great news all around. And I think adding people to that stable who could use the boost by, you know, the boost of working with Callis, being a heat magnet, would be beneficial to anyone involved. As far as who it could be, I'm a little hesitant to suggest names right now only because we don't really know if or how significant this pending split is going to be with the introduction of of Collision. So I would imagine that Callis and his stablemates will reside on Dynamite so that they can continue to feud with the Elite. So that, I assume that means that most people who are going to reside over on Collision are going to be out of contention. Because if they weren't, you know, I would throw out names like Miro and Andrade, you know, talent who we haven't seen in months, who could certainly use a significant boost. But it does sound like those guys are going to be part of Collision. So,
did they sufficiently answer whether Callis and Takeshita are aligned with Black Bull Comic Club?
No, they didn't. I
and wasn't that like the whole thing the announcer said? We're gonna find out. We're gonna find out. So that's I'm gonna give them a little flexibility and say, well, maybe Callis didn't want to reveal everything yet. But I don't think the announcers followed up by going, hey, we didn't get an answer to our main question. So if you are gonna hype that maybe we're gonna answer to something and you don't get it, at least follow, you know, assure the viewers we're gonna follow up on that. We still need to find out.
The only thread that I could really pull was the fact that Callis intimated that he had, you know, that they were going to build a family. And so given that BCC is already an established group, it sounded a little bit less like it was them and more like he was putting together a new stable. But if that's the case, I don't think they were clear enough about it. I think it was just, you know, I'm just surmising that.
Yeah, I just think the announcer should have said, oh, you know, Callis didn't bring up Black Bull Combat Club. It sure, you know, we can surmise from what he said he's going to build his own faction. And I think we learned that this is Callis working on his own, and he's going to war with Kenny Omega and the Elite, and he's going to be obsessed with them. And Takeshita is the first piece in that army that he's building. And I mean, that would have been enough. You know, I just don't remember anything like that following up on the promo. Again, it's not an insignificant detail, but it is a detail that doesn't unravel what they're trying to do in any way. Because I think people are going to be intrigued with where it goes from here. And I agree. Sergio, I don't want to punt on it too much, but I haven't given thought other than when he first brought it up watching the segment, you know, and it didn't have a lot of time to think about it. Who would be a good fit with him? You know, he listed a bunch of Japanese wrestlers and, you know, there's sort of a hint that maybe Omega will team with one of them or two of them at some point against – or, you know, some Japanese wrestlers against Callis and the people that he builds around Takeshita. And I think we got a little hint of that with Hangman Page, perhaps, when he said, oh, he's in another country, but not Canada. The idea, you know, I assume that's laying the groundwork for Omega showing up with Japanese wrestlers, which then leads into the co-pay-per-view with New Japan coming up this summer. And I think they did a nice job kind of laying some clues out. Yeah, go ahead.
I'd actually rather that they pivot to that, too, rather than continuing the feud with Blackpool Combat Club, because it really goes back to my issue I mentioned before, where AEW has a bunch of guys that, you know, are supposed to be babyfaces or supposed to be heels, but the crowd doesn't really care because they're cool or they just want a really good match.
Yeah, yeah.
And the BCC really falls into that category. I mean, like, yeah, I guess they're heels, but they also they're just vicious wrestlers. They're just wrestlers who like to fight and beat down their opponent. And like, people don't want to boo Bryan Danielson. People don't want to boo Jon Moxley. So yes, they're going to get excited about a BCC and Elite feud, but they're not really booing the Blackpool Combat Club. They're just enjoying the fight. Whereas if the Elite are feuding with Don Callis in this, you know, blood feud where Callis has turned his back on his friend Kenny Omega, there is a clearly defined babyface team and a clearly defined heel team, and they will get those reactions.
What was I going to say about what you just said? It just slipped away. I want to remember what it was. I can't remember. Oh, it'll come to me at the most inopportune time. You'll be in the middle of something else. Sergio, back to you for any follow-up.
Well, like I said, that was pretty much the only thing I really caught on Dynamite. I caught a couple sniffs of other else, so I can't really comment on anything else. But, I mean,
yeah.
You guys are right. They could have paid more lip service to, like, was there a clear breakup with, like, C and Callis working together or not? I kind of took the whole family thing when he said, you know, I'm going to build a new family as taking it as like, oh, no, I don't have nothing to do with the BCC. I have my own thing. Because honestly, if Callis made a group, I could honestly see maybe after their feud with the Elite, maybe his new group goes after the BCC because they did give him a nasty gash in his head that he blamed on Kenny Omega, but it was still done technically by Jon Moxley. And, I know you guys said you didn't really have time to think. And like I said, I'm a big Don Callis fan, and that's why I've been thinking for months, like, oh, who can you put under this guy? You know, you could put a powerhouse out.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just tonight where I was like, hey, like,
gotcha.
You know, who could go under him? It's like I've been thinking, like, powerhouse Haas, Bandito, maybe even like a Kyle Fletcher, who his partner's gone, or a returning Santana, because what's he going to do when he comes back? I just fantasy booked it in my head a bunch, but I'm just really excited about it, and that's really all I got for you guys today, because like I said, I didn't really watch the show, but I am excited to see where this goes, and I'm excited to watch the rest of the show and see what I missed.
Very good. Sergio, appreciate the call. Thanks for calling up.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, if there's anybody – I mean, there's, like, so many people in different factions, you know, Prince Nana has his group and stuff. So, like, some are just – taken up, but I think some of the things Sergio mentioned are good, like a Kyle Fletcher, somebody who just, you know, kind of like Takeshita, hasn't established a strong personality and people would buy as credible in the ring, but also needing leadership to get to the next level. And that is worthy of that. You don't want to just, you know, grab somebody who's not worthy of it. And I don't want to pick on too many people, but or even at, you know, like even in Action Andretti, like, you know, if Callis's group is pulling people to the dark side who were actually like upstanding citizens before that, I like that. And Andretti's not, you know, ready on the microphone to be a good baby face. In fact, I think he's sorry, but kind of unlikable in his demeanor on the microphone, as exciting as he is in the ring. So if he could turn that to cockiness and be managed by him, I guess that's a name that jumps out to me, because it's kind of like Wheeler Yuta. We got an email on him. You know, he's elevated through association with the BCC, and that's good. And so I'm kind of thinking, who else can be elevated through association, and Callis can, you know, actually not take somebody who, like Miro, who everybody wants to see pushed anyway, but somebody who kind of needs Callis.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why, like, I really like the recommendation of Powerhouse Hobbs, because he's a guy who needs some direction after that, the botched TNT title run there that just went absolutely nowhere, and he just immediately disappears. Hobbs has been in and out of stables, but they never are really relevant. And that's the thing. A stable led by Don Callis is obviously going to be prevalent and relevant and getting the TV time. And so I think he is a really good candidate for that.
Yeah. I'd like to see, by the way, and this is a little early, I don't think it has to be right away, but I'd like to see Callis manage a female wrestler who goes after a title too, like diversify the roster or the faction enough that he's got more than just, you know, one group of guys going after the Elite. I'm fine with that being initial, but again, let's make Callis the, you know, it's not a perfect comparison, but the Paul Heyman of AEW the rest of this year, and lean on him and let him be a star manager. And, you know, what I want to see Callis do is focus, again, not on popping the people in the back. There's too much of his commentary over the years that's trying to, you know, get pop the newsletter readers or get a pop from their locker room with some insider line or show his international hardcore fan credibility by, you know, dropping names that aren't really in the mix, but hardcore fans know, and shift to being the heel manager of the year for not just the people voting in the Observer Awards, but for the you know, the million plus people who are watching AEW content every week, who go beyond those who are ordering the pay-per-views.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see Callis outside of the universe, or not even outside the universe of, but opposing Kenny Omega rather than being with him, because I think that they bring each other down. I just don't like that pairing. I never have. I think that Callis gets too comedic, and I think that in
self-indulgent.
Yep. And it makes Kenny the same way. I just, like, there was a time there with Callis with the Elite when they were heels where it and Kenny, I absolutely adore Kenny Omega as a character. And there was a time where that act had like go away heat with me, because it was so over the top and exactly like you said, self-indulgent. It just didn't click. And I think that Callis has a lot more to offer, and I've liked, you know, all of what Omega has done since that split decidedly more than anything that he did with Callis. So, I'm looking forward to seeing that. One more name. I was scrolling through the roster, Wade, as you mentioned, the possibly bringing a woman into the group. One name that jumped out to me right away, and I think she should be on her way back, is Layla Hirsch.
Yeah, I think that could work.
I don't know. I think she's due back. Last I knew, I thought I saw her name thrown around as someone who was preparing to return or maybe even working house shows, but I'm not sure. But it seems like they had something going with her. Mm-hmm. And she suffered her injury at a show at a taping that I was at.
Oh.
And it was a dark match. It was being taped for Dark, and I remember she was first or second babyface out of the curtain, and she got a really, really good reaction. And within like 2 or 3 minutes, the injury happened, and you know, it hasn't been seen since. But
also, just plucking somebody who's not on the AEW roster from the free agency or Impact. You know, there's not a ton that you can pull from New Japan, if you already, you know, I don't think you should just build a roster. Well, I mean, I guess you could build a roster of Japanese wrestlers, but, you know, Takeshita's there. Takeshita's one of those, you know, one of those heels who fans loved, and they're going to be like, you know, the fans that I don't think AEW always caters to, but the ones who are going to get just like totally pulled into, I liked him, and now he's with Callis, and they sort of get pulled into, you know, being like, you know, and this is not a derogatory, it's not meant to be derogatory, but in the old school marks, you know, who would be like, no, you know, Takeshita, what are you doing with that scumbag? Like they get pulled into the storylines as opposed to, you know, the next level ardent fans who are, you know, analyzing things in a different way. Like I think the Takeshita turn is going to get them to react. And I know a lot of like hardcore fans who have friends who are more casual fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I love hearing about them, whether it's when people go to a house show, we have an outside correspondent, the person, regular listener, but they've got a casual friend with them. We get feedback there, or other people I correspond with. That they should be tapping into the emotions that they're available out there. Those fans to be pulled in where they want to buy a ticket and boo Callis and boo Takeshita for siding with that scumbag Callis. Find some people like that where people can be angry because they aligned with him. All right. Let's I'll give the phone number one more time. 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. If you're live streaming our show and want to be part of it, you are invited to do so. You can also talk about CM Punk or anything AW related when you call push one. All right. Up next is Grant in Detroit. Grant, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
How y'all fellas doing tonight? What I was thinking about. So I've been a big proponent of Swerve getting a push since he got to AEW, and since they haven't finished the Keith Lee feud, it seems like they moving them on to better things, even though, you know, that was kind of weird how we just never got the one-on-one match between them. But just what do y'all think Swerve is? How far do you think Swerve can go? Like, where do you think he end up in? Like, you think he world title material? Like, if you notice, I don't know, he put on more muscle. Like, I think he come across as a pretty good heel. Like, I don't know. Just what y'all think of Swerve and his projection?
Yeah. I mean, Swerve is one of those, I wouldn't say untapped, but, you know, lost a little bit in the mix. And I think Tony Khan should, I think he should decide to make Swerve a top guy. You know, and you know, there's always, and sometimes I hear after the fact, or, you know, sometimes I hear during when people are critical of someone not getting a push, and I hear reasons why they're not. I'm like, oh, okay, nobody knew that, but now I get it. It's not always something I can report. I don't know anything like that with Swerve, but I'm just throwing it out there that Tony doesn't push some people. Sometimes it's not, he doesn't think that it would make money for him. It's, there's other reasons. So I just throw that out as a caveat, not specific to Swerve, but just in general, that sometimes we think, why aren't you pushing that guy? And you're critical of a booker, and you find out later the booker knew something we didn't. So if that's not the case with Swerve in any way, where he's like, oh, you know, maybe his contract's coming up, or maybe he,
what,
then push
way,
him. Like,
you don't have to take a shot at Keith Lee. We already know.
I was actually, as I was saying that, I was thinking of a couple WWE people over the years in particular that, and not when Keith Lee was there. It's not a double shot at Keith Lee. Nevertheless, the potential of Swerve to be one of the reasons that fans tune in to watch Dynamite or Collision, I think is substantial. I'm like thinking, how high can he go? I think he can be a world title challenger, Brandon. But you know, MJF's got that title now. But a real credible foe for a babyface TNT champion. I think he deserves more than, you know, just being an international title holder. But if he did win that title and had a hot run of defenses as a way to kind of build his credibility up and lay the foundation for like a mega push this winter, you know, like much later this year or next year, that works for me too. But there is something there that I just don't think you want him just sort of hanging out in the upper mid card and not a focus. And there's just too many people like that in AEW. And that's where I just, you know, you want to move him into that starting lineup as opposed to a bench player, so to speak. Brandon?
Yeah, I think, first of all, one of the keys with Swerve is there's been a lot of failed attempts to put a stable or a faction around him. And I think the Mogul Affiliates is a better answer than what they had done previously. But I still don't think it's a great solution. I think I would prefer to see Swerve out on his own or with a group of more significant players. And maybe they have something more in mind for Brian Cage and the other guys. But at the end of the day, they are technically Ring of Honor talent, and that goes to another thing where I would really like to see the Ring of Honor talent kept in Ring of Honor if that's going to continue to be a thing. So as far as Swerve goes, yes, I'd prefer to see him alone, but I see him as a main event guy, a guy that you should be building around before too long. And it doesn't bother me necessarily if they were to, say, move the international championship to him and let him go, like you kind of said, Wade, on a run this summer of really strong, really solid title defenses where he's in that Orange Cassidy role. Cassidy is a mainstay on Dynamite. I mean, it's almost a running joke at this point that he kicks off Dynamite every week, and he didn't this week, and I think that's probably a good thing. But if Swerve wins that title, I want the work ethic to remain the same for that international title. I want to see Swerve every week on Dynamite, whether he's defending that title or not. He should be a focal point of one of the two main shows going forward. And I think if you do that, if you don't do the start and stop stuff, if you don't relegate him to Rampage, where he spent a lot of his AEW career so far, if you keep him on one of the main two shows and you sell the idea that he's important, I think Swerve is talented enough to do the rest and make himself a major star.
All right. Grant, back to you.
Okay. And I think the only other thing that I had was, where do you see them going with the tag division? It kind of seemed like they were dropping, like, little hints here and there throughout the show, like with Jungle Boy and Hook, and then I think when somebody had brought up the Hardys and them being on the quest, and I think even the Acclaim had made a comment, like, where y'all see the tag division going? And talk to y'all.
So
guys,
it's not
there.
Like the Acclaimed were, yeah, the Acclaimed were throwing their hat in the ring to, thanks Grant, appreciate it. They're throwing their hat in the ring with Billy to go after House of Black for the Trios title. So again, it was nice. They follow up on the pay-per-view, but also pivot to some new things. You know, it's why people look forward to, well, it used to be why people look forward to the Raw after Mania. It grew into, you know, the crowd's going to take over the show and it's going to be newsworthy. And that way, that's been less the case lately. But that's all kinds of factors that played into that. But yeah, you know, people, sometimes after a pay-per-view, especially with AEW only doing them, you know, four times a year, you're ready to move on from things and see, you know, once things get settled, the pay-per-view, and then it's exciting to see what new programs get set up. So I think that's a Trios title situation. Who jumps out to you now, Brandon, being the likely challengers for FTR?
Kind of feels like Jay White and Juice Robinson. I mean, I think they probably finish up what they're doing with Starks next week. I mean, they're doing the second match with Starks and Jay White. And then it feels like, you know, I can't imagine that they're going to just leave that thread there. I mean, FTR now has had two segments in a row with Bullet Club Gold. And I would imagine that's the next play. And I hope that does more to elevate Jay White than it does to make him feel like a mid-card guy, because so far, I mean, man, if you had told me that this is what Jay White was going to be coming into AEW, I don't know that I would believe you. And I'm someone who, I have been very critical of the start-stop nature of so many pushes in AEW, but I just thought that Jay White was a hot enough commodity and someone who was sought after enough that they would be coming out guns blazing for him. And it has been just the opposite, how quickly he has just become another guy. And so I don't know if a feud with FTR solves that problem, because you've still got Juice Robinson there, who I think drags him down to a certain level. And the AEW tag team titles have fallen off a cliff in terms of their level of importance.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm glad that the titles are on FTR, because I think having them there makes you think of them more seriously. But when they're out there having 20-minute interference guitar matches with Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett on pay-per-view, they're not sending the message that they're serious wrestlers either.
I think there's things Jeff Jarrett did in the last few months that were really good, and that actually others in AEW, coming from the, you know, indie scene, it's all about star ratings and high spots, and this is an awesome chance, could really learn from. And, you know, there's things Jeff just can't do, obviously at his age, and really never could, that some of the dazzling athletes in AEW do, and that's an important part of the AEW formula. So I'm, you know, complimenting that he brought this kind of timeless efficient style. Sometimes it's more about facial expressions, milking a moment, pausing when there's a good reason to pause, all of that. All that said, I did not miss them not being on the show tonight. Okay.
Me either.
Yeah, I think it sends the wrong tone. And it sets the wrong tone, sends the wrong message to fans what AEW is all about. I think, you know, we talked earlier about Blackpool Comic Club. You know, I was thinking, you don't want to be a babyface opposing them, you know, because they're heels. But fans are going to want to cheer them. But maybe, you know, Claudio and Wheeler going after FTR is something that they can do too once they get past Juice and Jay White, which I agree they set up tonight as the immediate thing. I'm glad Jay White got some mic time. I don't like that Juice doesn't seem like Jay's sidekick, but seems like almost an equal in how they portray them. That's a concern. You almost want a Jay Mark element to it, or a Sheamus Butch WWE analogy there, where there's like this kind of wild-eyed, this wild card who isn't a top guy, but he has value. But Jay White's the mastermind. And mm-hmm. I want them to adjust their chemistry. And that's the type of detail I just don't know that is a strength of Tony Khan, which is okay. Two people got a chance to talk, but is the end result what we wanted out of the dynamic between those two? So I think there's it's fine for White and Juice to be together as a team, but I really think it's important in this early framing to the to the majority of the Dynamite audience who do not have a big history with Jay White, to make sure every moment that he's on TV, it's clear he's an alpha who you should be keeping your eye on, whether he wins tag titles or not, to be a challenger for the world title someday.
And, well, it also, I mean, I think they kind of handicap them to some extent by throwing the Bullet Club moniker on them. I mean, it's just, it's so derivative at this point. They could be their own guys, especially Jay White. There's no reason for him to come in with the Bullet Club thing. I mean, I think it defines them down almost immediately. Whether they win the tag team titles or not, a very quick and very strict refocus on Jay White, I think, is very much necessary. But I think the other issue with those tag team titles is that, you mentioned earlier the Acclaimed getting involved again with House of Black. The Trios championships are taking away really prime opportunities for interesting tag team feuds. I mean, you can take a list of names who are perfectly equipped to feud with FTR for the tag team titles and have really good matches, including the Trios champions. I mean, any combination, Brody King and Buddy Matthews against FTR, sign me up. I mean, but we're not going to get it, because they're, off doing another title that we don't need.
Exactly. No, totally good point. Okay, let's. This is somewhat related, or at least I'm going to extrapolate something that's related. In an email from James in Clemson, he goes, "Wade, I mostly agree with you about tonight's show, but I do have one issue with Dynamite tonight. I was not a fan of the presentation order. Tony Storm felt like an afterthought, and the men's champ was only in a short segment. Before my call, the women's champ would have opened the show, followed by the MGF pre-tape to show how important the titles are. I just feel like that should be more important than covering Bullet Club Gold." I mentioned in my report at pwtorch.com, I'm trying to find my wording, make sure I didn't just think it but didn't write it. I said, it's good to see they followed up on the huge win by Statlander, because you don't want to end Jade Cargill's streak and not capitalize on it. Yes, I almost would have led the entire show with the announcers talking about it, even though it wasn't, the main event of the pay-per-view. I didn't just think it. I did write it. I wanted to confirm that before I said so. I would have, the main event of the shows, the main events were the men's title match and the Anarchy in the Arena. I think I would have led with, Jade Cargill Street coming to an end, and Statlander winning the title. Now, I think this gets to the point I'm going to make about the tag teams. I think you can justify it more if you only have one women's championship, because then it's one of the two major singles titles. And let's say you don't even have any other men's titles, or you only have one other men's title, not two or three counting Hook's belt. And then all the titles that are showing up Friday on Rampage, don't get me started. I think with Chris Statlander, if she beat Jade Cargill, and that was the only championship, women's singles title, you can lead the show and justify it. Like, we have so much to talk about tonight, but the streak is over. And then give details on it and talk about it and say, we're going to hear, you don't have to have Chris Statlander's promo right then, but lead with that, talk about it, make it seem like it is the biggest story of the show, and also cover the MJF win. If you had two major singles titles, one men, one women, lead the show talking about that, as And you can even say, hey, we've got this six-man tag match coming up momentarily, but we need to discuss this first. And I don't think you're not going to lose a ton of viewers. AW fans are AW fans. Like, don't worry about every minute that goes by that someone's going to tune out and never tune in again. There's bigger things going on with wrestling booking than retaining viewers minute by minute. That's small ball. The looking big picture, it's emphasizing the importance of singles titles. And the Jade Cargill streak was a big deal. You've now gifted is the wrong word. You've now transferred that all the hype and all the suspense of who would be Jade to Chris Statlander to get the most out of it. One, you obviously have to follow up on it. And I think, the video package did and how she came across in the promo was encouraging, but I would have led with it. And so I am actually with James on that. Brandon, your thoughts?
Yeah, to your point, I mean, they quite literally opened their pay-per-views with a promo for sports betting. So I think they can spare a couple minutes to talk about what happened with their major titles at the pay-per-view. Yeah, I think that it just speaks to a larger issue with the women's presentation in AEW. It's been a problem since the beginning. It remains a problem now. I mean, the TBS championship with Jade Cargill was largely relegated to Rampage, which, funny stuff, was on TNT. Yeah.
Yep.
Made very little sense. I mean, I was glad to see Chris Statlander on the show tonight because, maybe it means that we're going to see it more heavily featured on the main show now that it's changed hands for the first time. But the women's world championship has had that same problem. I mean, I have said and actually said in my report this past weekend for PW Torch on Double or Nothing that Jamie Hayter felt like the most consequential women's champion in a while, but it never really felt like she had a major defense. It felt like she was often overshadowed by what was going on with Saraya and Toni Storm, even if it was involving her. And I thought that, she was probably the best person to lead the division into something new and something better. Obviously, the injury is untimely, and there's nothing you can do about that sort of thing. So I get why they had to pivot, but I just don't feel like they're – to me, I think Jade Cargill losing the TBS championship this weekend was maybe the first genuinely consequential women's title change they've had in the company. And that's not good.
Yeah. And when Toni Storm came out and talked about her title reign – it felt, oh, that's right, there's two of them, and now you have these two women both claiming to be the best, and why are there two titles than each woman is claiming to be the best? It's just, I mean, nobody wants to watch their NHL team win the Stanley Cup, and then, on split screen, there's someone else carrying around, the Henry Cup, and claiming they're the best. Like, so it's just a problem with having too many belts when they're not, when there's no differentiation between them.
And there's been real, there's never been a real definition as to what the television titles are like, we understand that they're television titles, but if you have the TBS champion proclaiming that she's the best and really base in a strictly kayfabe sense, I think Jade Cargill could very well make the argument that she was the best champion. I mean, she had a more dominant reign than any woman has ever had with the Women's World Championship. So she could certainly make the case that her title was even more important than the women's world title. So then when you then change both titles, now the water is even murkier.
Agreed. I would like there to be a little reassessment of things, or maybe with Collision we'll get some definition between the two shows, or certain titles will be assigned to either show. And then, you can still argue there should be one floating champion, but at least maybe there'll be some definition. Some differentiation between them. All right. Second topic is I listened to the VIP podcast, Everything with Rich and Wade, today, and really appreciated Rich's take on Danielson at the media scrum. However, when I watched the scrum, my big takeaway was MJF. He is, in my opinion, the most intelligent person in wrestling. Oh, he's going to love it. I hope he's listening. I really appreciated the way he described how open challenges are dumb, why his moves matter and other wrestlers' moves don't, and why others are afraid to face him. If the rest of the AEW wrestlers are smart, they will start to listen and look up to MJF while he's still around. Ooh, He's light years ahead of most of that roster. Any thoughts on that, Brandon?
Yeah, in the sense that it makes me think about the world title match on Sunday. I really enjoyed the match, and I think what I liked about it the most was the fact that throughout the course, the meta sense that I got in the match was that Jungle Boy, Darby Allin, and Sammy Guevara were hell-bent on having a really competitive, high spot filled, very fast paced AEW style match.
Mm-hmm.
And the story of MJF's involvement in that match is that he wanted absolutely nothing to do with it. He would laugh at them when they did it. He would make fun of the fact that they were executing all of these moves that put their own bodies in danger. And he would do as little as possible to gain offensive control and do it in the least flashy way that he could. And I loved the psychology of that because it told the story quite literally as to why I and many others have made the argument that the three of them were not at the level of MJF to compete for a world title on pay-per-view. It was the perfect way to tell that story. And I think MJF just gets it. I mean, he just understands. And I thought that was my favorite part of that match was watching him work through it. And you could almost see him do it in real time. And yeah, I think, you know, he's a step above most people.
He's smart. And he is, he's dedicated to having a legendary career unless he gets pulled into acting, you know, or other things first. And I don't know how the Von Erich thing will be with him doing the Von Erich movie and how he'll do there and what other stuff he's got going on. But, and, you know, WWE is paying top guys a lot of money right now. And, you know, if he has not genuinely signed an extension with AEW, it's going to be really interesting to watch what happens with him because he'd be a great fit in WWE, but he's a great fit in AEW, and there are absolutely things people can learn from him. Now, you know, yes, not everybody can work MJF's schedule and AEW survive. I mean, they need to have people, you know, top guys like Moxie who are out there just working their ass off every week and wanting to. And, you know, there might be some resentment of that, but I like, and you can argue MJF at his age and experience level hasn't earned, you know, the part-time in-ring schedule that he has, but it is part of his mystique. It's part of his brand. And I'm fine with, you know, diversification in terms of how wrestlers are presented, but MJF, I mean, there's just, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that he settled down from all the meta insider stuff last year. Yeah. And he's just out there, whether, you know, you liked or didn't like the Four Pillars storyline, as you know, this segment of the year for him, he's everything he does. I think he's finding a way to elevate it and make it feel important. And that involves the arc of the stories, but also what goes on in the ring bell to bell.
I think that it's also really, really neat that he draws attention to himself and to the company outside of the appearances he makes on AEW TV, in the sense that he's very picky about the appearances that he'll make, the signings that he'll do. And he could very easily show up to a signing and be not necessarily pleasant or nice to fans, but he could tone down the character significantly. But he doesn't, not even a little bit, in the sense that he almost begs you to record him and put him on the internet so that he will get more attention. And I mean, he's been doing this stuff since long before AEW even existed. I got to see MJF at a promotion in Maine here many times. He was actually the company's very first world champion. And I saw him win that title. And one of my favorite things that he did was every time he would come through, he would always have a table set up for autograph signings, as wrestlers will often do at indie events. But unlike all the wrestlers there, he wouldn't put a price out on the table. He would tell you his price for an autograph or a picture based on how ugly he thought you were. So the uglier he perceived you to be, the more expensive it would cost for an autograph or a picture. And people loved it. I mean, like, they enjoyed it.
That's awesome. I hadn't heard that story before. I love that. I love that. All right. Greg in Iowa emails. He says, first time he's given post-show feedback in several months. Thank you, Greg. A few thoughts on what's been said about the show and also the imminent return of CM Punk and the debut of Collision. I was wondering when we're going to get to some CM Punk talk. He says, I agree that's where Strickland needs to be doing more. If AEW is moving away from Keith Lee, that is a positive. Swerve versus Orange Cassidy would be a good match, following up from the Battle Royal, or a three-way program with Darby Allin. Just don't have Swerve lose to Sting. Brandon.
Yeah. I mean, no. Don't.
Yeah. If Jay White was in WWE and made his pay-per-view debut in a Battle Royal, people would be saying he is buried. I think White against Ricky Starks is counterproductive, as neither guy should be losing a feud at this time. That is a problem. It just feels like Starks and White should have been on a collision course for later. No pun intended at all. And build White up in a different way first, establish his personality, you know, his mission, maybe have him against a higher card name and win to make a statement. Or, you know, just berate and batter some lower card, you know, or a mid-card wrestler who he has a personal grudge with, where it's sort of a more heating him up slowly, but he can just definitively destroy them. But, you know, Sean Radigan, you know, wrote about this in the newsletter about a month back on Jay White. I mean, there's things about Jay White that are that are his strengths as an act and as a character that just hasn't come through yet. And doesn't mean that what he did in New Japan he has to do in AEW either. I mean, maybe there's a deliberate reason to approach things differently, or they'll get to it later. But Starks and White does feel like, wait, both of these guys should be winning this feud. And so what do you do?
Yeah, that was one of my biggest takeaways. When they matched the two of them up, it felt like Starks had built momentum and then had kind of gotten cast to the side and really needed to get another credible win in a feud, because, you know, he won the Jericho feud, but it really didn't elevate him in any significant way. So I thought that was a little curious to match the two of them up when they both so clearly needed a big win. I think that Jay White probably would have been better served against one of the pillars if they had not been, you know, already taken by the MJF storyline. But somebody like Darby Allin, who is sort of Teflon within the AEW universe, and who I think can afford to take a loss like that, I don't see them elevating Darby Allin to world championship contention the way that I think that Ricky Starks could potentially get to one day. So to me, something like Jay White versus Darby Allin, where Jay White can win and go over strong, and you're sending the message that, hey, this is a guy who is beating someone who we have featured in the upper card before. And then you could also have some interaction between Jay White and Sting, which I think sends the message that, hey, this guy is important.
All right. Up next in Greg's email here. I absolutely agree that Jade Cargill losing should have been more prominent at the top of the show. I'm not sold that the loss on Sunday was a good move compared to building up the eventual win. What do you think about Chris Statlander?
I like Statlander. I think that she kind of is what she is. I don't think that they're going to create a massive star out of her. I think that she is kind of, she's at the level she's going to be at, and she certainly deserves to hold a championship. I think that she's proven to be good enough in the ring, good enough, has a good enough connection with the fans, makes sense in that role at some point. But I understand why they went with the title switch on Sunday, because that undercard was really hurting for moments that could really get the crowd going. And I think just the inertia of the situation by the time they reached the Jade Cargill match, it really felt like the crowd needed something. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if they wouldn't have gotten more out of her win by building it up. Back and get in Jade's face and challenge her, and then get a couple of wins on Dynamite in the next couple of weeks here. I mean, to me, given how consequential Jade's run as champion was and how big of a deal you've made out of her streak, I don't know. I think you want that at the top of a Dynamite. And get,
yeah.
you know, get the big main event moment out of it, get the crowning of Statlander. I think, number one, that sends a stronger message that Jade Cargill is someone you believe in, because you're putting her and her title and her streak in the main event of Dynamite. And it sends the same message about Statlander, that you're passing the torch to her and that she's good enough to be in this spot.
I think those are really good points. I think Statlander walking out after Jade's win and looking and just staring at her and pointing at her, getting a crowd mm-hmm. pop, and then Jade grabbing the microphone, and you can just make this up out of whole cloth if you want. She can go, people say I'm scared of you. People say that I've been nervous about your return. I'm not scared of you. So go earn a title shot. And so, you know, in a way where she's saying I'm not scared of you,
mm-hmm.
but also telling Statlander, go earn it. And then have Statlander go, fine, I'll go earn it, and I'll see you in a few weeks. You tell that story, yeah, and you get a few weeks of a story arc out of it where you reintroduce people to who Statlander is. Maybe she has a better idea of who she is this time as a character on national television as a weekly act. Mm-hmm. And then you can develop this notion where the announcers go, yeah, you know, the buzz in the locker room is, you know, Jade Cargill, if she feared anyone, it's Statlander. And then come up with why. Tell the story. Create a story out of whole cloth. Pull some from some things in the past, whatever it is. And, yeah, then have it be more of a moment. I'm not against, you know, surprise return, shocking title change. But it had a little bit of a Money in the Bank cash-in. And,
yes.
and it's something away from Statlander's win to do it the way that it was done, even if Jade did volunteer for it. There's still the asterisk. And maybe that's part of the plan, is they wanted to protect Jade a little by going, well, she lost, but it was her second match in a row.
I was talking about this with Torch contributor Frank Pettiani a little bit on Sunday while he was at the show in the building. And his concern with it was, yeah, it got a huge crowd reaction, but it felt a little bit like Money in the Bank, like you said. And we both kind of drew the conclusion that, you know, it puts both women in a tough situation, because Chris Statlander is clearly the babyface here. Jade Cargill is clearly the heel here. But Cargill valiantly opted to defend her championship a second time in the night, despite just going through what many would consider her toughest challenge yet for that championship. And Chris Statlander has the benefit of catching her off guard, being a surprise, and also being fresh.
Yeah.
So it casts them in the wrong light. It makes Cargill look like a woman who got taken advantage of at the end of the day and lost her title, perhaps unfairly, and that Statlander took advantage of the situation to win. And I don't think that's the message you want to send.
No, it's not the worst thing, because you're gonna have Jade
sure.
say what you just said, and Statlander go, well, we'll find out. And you do a rematch, you know, and
right.
you build up the rematch, and you main event with it, and you build it up for a few weeks, and it turns into a big deal. Maybe it's the first main event match on Collision, and you know that's one of the big selling points of that first episode. And maybe they have a story that they will tell, and we'll be going, okay, you know, there's some negatives that came along with it, but they actually have a plan, and there's a rhythm to it, and there was a reason they did what they did, and there's some negatives baked in, but in the end it made sense, and they followed up on it well, and Statlander affirmed her victory and took away any excuse Jade has. So if they tell that story, then, you know, I'll be totally fine with it. And there's not ever just one good way to do things or one right way to do things, but this isn't in the category of the right way to do it yet. The follow-up is key. Final point from Greg. What do you think of the advertising for Collision being centered around Miro, Andrade, and Thunder Rosa, none of whom have been featured on TV in nearly a year, not to mention the elephant in the room, CM Punk? When the press release first came out, we're like, all right, these are wrestlers who are, you know, malcontents or have had fights with people or don't get along with people, and it's
all the misfit toys.
Yeah, the misfit toys, the rebels, the whatever. And so I'm fine with that. But again, I mean, the Collision is going to succeed not because of people who know and care about the Thunder Rosa, Britt Baker faction feud. You know, that's, you know, got covered on the reality show, but that got seen by such a small slice of the, you know, goal audience for Collision and much smaller than Dynamite. And, you know, same thing with Andrade and Guevara. You know, we get a little mention of Guevara now and then, you know, he'll allude to it. But that's not really a thing you want to build collision around, is the idea that people are thinking about that, and that's part of the brand, part of the branding of the show. So I'm holding out on how to feel about it till I see what really happens with the initial lineup and how they talk about the roster. I think CM Punk, you know, Tony Khan mentioned it. And by the way, they're not hyping Tony Khan's announcement. Did they hype Tony Khan's announcement on Twitter? I should ask.
Yes, they did.
Oh, okay, okay. I didn't see that. I didn't see that today. So
it's complete parody at this point.
Wow. I was ready to give them credit. I'm like, oh, wait a second. I was busy for a few hours before Dynamite. I didn't look at. It was one of those rare cases where I wasn't, absorbing what the hype was beforehand. So that's
okay,
funny.
To their credit, and yeah. Maybe they don't deserve this, but they didn't this week say that it was one of the biggest announcements in company history.
Yeah.
So kudos to them for that, I guess.
Yep. It also comes across like, we're doing this a little out of time on purpose. It's like, no, you're not. You're doing it as soon as you possibly can with all the nonsense going on behind the scenes. But
and, of course, it ruined the first two announcements because they couldn't say everything that they wanted to say, and then it seemed lesser than because we have this show, and here are the people who are going to be on it, but, like, not the one that we're really focusing on. Yeah. And, by the way, we know where it's booked, kind of, but, like, if we tell you, you're going to think it's about this guy, and we don't know if it is yet.
Or we don't want to go there if we don't have this guy. But now we have – I don't know if they didn't announce Punk last week because they wanted to spread it out, or if they wanted to see what they could sell at United Center on the implication of Punk, and now they want to, you know, really do it. This is the thing. Punk got there's a lot of people cheering, a few people thumbs down and booing. He got a big reaction, but then it dissipated. As far as I know, it's just they went on with the show.
Yeah.
We talk about they should have led with the Jade Cargill streak ending and Chris Statlander, and then covered the world title outcome first and then went to the opening six man. I would argue – they should have done more follow-up on Punk. That should have been part. I mean, if you're building this new franchise Saturday night show around him, talk more about him on commentary. Have Alex Marvez and Renee, like, ask people that they're interviewing backstage, you know, a question and have the person go, well, wait a second, I'm still buzzing about the return of CM Punk. Like, if you're going to go all in with him, go all in and make it sound like it's the buzz in the locker room and people can't help but talk about it. And the announcers still talk about it, but we didn't have.
It might be the buzz in the locker room, but not for the reasons they want.
You want to take control of that story and create, you know, create that fictionalized version. But you're right. And I didn't hear, you know, CM Punk chants. I don't know. I genuinely don't know what Punk's drawing power is going to be. I think his brand is damaged, and I think they should go in to Collision with the assumption that his brand is badly damaged, and there should be a humility to that. And what they should do is approach it being CM Punk is a big deal because he's immensely charismatic and talented on the microphone and in the ring. There is an X factor about him that it makes you can't compare him to anybody else of his generation. So how do we almost build that from scratch again? Like anything above building from scratch is a bonus, and you take it. I mean, you don't fight it. But what do we do to tell people why CM Punk is special? And let's assume the make or break difference in Collision being a success or not, based on expectations, is going to be selling new people who weren't around 8-10 years ago as big fans of CM Punk. And let's establish what makes them cool. And Phil Brooks should show up going, I need to sell myself to a whole new audience. Same argument. It's a very similar argument I make to Kenny Omega. Which is, there's a lot of people who know who you are, but don't show up acting like that's all that counts. So to me, like Collision, if you're going to build it around Punk, not in a way that feels like you're insulting fans who obviously know who he is, and vast majority of people watching know who he is, but even those people, Punk should show up and be like, I'm humble and I don't know if I'm good anymore and I'm injury prone. Like, don't be self-deprecating. Walk out there with a mission statement and bravado and have an edge to you. Leave the crap from behind the scenes behind and market him as a major star. And go back to what made him a major star in the first place and build on that, not the controversy, not I'm going to come in and be humble. I don't want to step on things. Just build the brand around him. But in a way that's almost introducing what made him a star in the first place all over again. Brandon.
Do you think that we talk a lot about, and this has actually been brought up this week, MJF brought it up at the press conference, something like 7% or so of AEW's audience uses Twitter. The CM Punk elite controversy was primarily was on social media, particularly yep. Twitter. Do you think that there is a large segment of the people attending AEW shows and watching AEW on a weekly basis who might have known something went on with Punk? They don't know the details. They know he was hurt and just don't care. Just don't know about it. Don't know about everything that happened. Don't know about the contentious nature, about the fact that there are people who won't work with him.
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple things. One, I think there's people who know and don't care. They want to be entertained.
Sure.
They don't want the show built. They don't want his character built around any of that. And I think there's something to that. Like, I don't want to know about it. I don't want Succession to be dragged down by behind the scenes politics. Just give me a good script and great acting. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I'm with Punk. Like, and that's where I was with MJF after, kind of a fiasco of 2022 is just go out and be good, be a great heel. That's what people ultimately tune in for. That's what draws. Just be a great heel. Stop this Twitter stuff. Stop the meta stuff. Stop the insider references and all that. Just go be a great heel. And I just think pro wrestling is a timeless art form and entertainment form. And just because you're on Twitter, and this is, people talk to Tony Khan about this, doesn't mean your audience is, and certainly your target audience isn't. So I think there's a lot of people who know and don't care. That's not of interest to them. They just want to be entertained by CM Punk, the wrestler that they once fell in love with, or they want to find out why CM Punk was such a big deal a dozen years ago, 10 years ago, by showing all over again that he can still do it in his mid-40s. It's a question mark, can he? I mean, I don't mean to ignore that. Maybe he can't. And maybe that is going to be a problem. But yes, there's a lot of people who don't know about it. Now, you said the people who buy tickets and watch Dynamite. I think those are two separate groups.
Yeah.
And the people who buy tickets are the majority of them absolutely know the insider stuff. I think that's a hardcore fan base. And I think sometimes it sends the wrong signals to Tony Khan, frankly, when it comes to growing the TV viewership audience. And so the TV viewership audience is not the people you're chasing. I know, granted, I know people who love Punk and now they're soured on him and they may not watch Collision with the excitement that they watched the first Punk appearance on Rampage. So those people exist, but the big numbers are not people wrapped up in this. And that's where I say that the first few weeks of Collision should be about a great CM Punk storyline that's self-contained, that's not meta, there's no references to what's gone on. Make it about a professional athlete trying to be great and show he's still at the top of his game and have somebody try to get in the way of it and just keep it simple with him. Because that's what we're, originally people loved him because he has this X factor, not because of social media or backstage controversies.
Yeah. I really hope too that we still don't know, of course, what this reported brand split is going to look like. But what I don't want to see happen is a soft brand split for the wrestlers who don't get along and then everyone else just mingles. That to me would send the wrong message, and people who watch the show are going to be like, wait a minute, why don't these guys appear here? So I mean to say, like, if it's CM Punk and Miro and Andrade are your anchors of Collision, and then your anchors on Dynamite are the Elite, and they never appear on each other's shows, but everyone else moves back and forth, I don't like that. I don't think that works, and I think that as much as you try to ignore it, it's going to be the elephant in the room if you don't address it. So I'd prefer that if they're going to go all in with this thing, no pun intended, they just do a straight up hard brand split and they stick to it. And they can trade wrestlers down the road if they want to get other matches. but they have the roster for a split. If anyone has the roster for a hard brand split, it's AEW.
I pitched the idea a few weeks back, I think on this show, of doing quarterly roster reshuffles, like after every pay-per-view.
Sure.
Just do a draft like four times a year. Like, you know, keep it super fresh. Like, don't do it annually, but have a hard roster split, but don't limit yourself to a whole year of it. You can do it in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can pop ratings for those first two shows after every pay-per-view by having, you know, and you can just outdo WWE by making it logical and structured.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, you know, when you, and then maybe politics change. Maybe being around, you know, maybe just coexisting for a while, even separately, but kind of, okay. It's the time of night where the cat's been taking off the puppy. That would be my vote to bank it a hard brand split, but not permanent. So people who are watching Dynamite and not Collision suddenly have to start watching Collision to see the stars that they're invested
right.
in.
Right.
Yeah. All right, up next, Dazan from St. Louis says, hey, Wade and Brandon, what do you think of the Wheeler Yuta push of late, and what is his upside in AEW? I think he's in a good spot. I get that he, you know, Moxley, Claudio, Danielson, he fits in with them. I mean, he's just their type of gritty wrestler. But he's the fourth guy in that group. And that's fine. I think people respect him. He's good in the ring. He does not have everything I just said Punk has, you know, that X factor, that charisma, that personality. His promos were kind of cringy, they just were consistently cringy. But man, is he good. And you know, when he's not on the microphone, he's good at just projecting this kind of tightly wound, tough, forward leaning, super skilled, resilient, exciting wrestler. He fits the BCC. So I think he's in a good spot. I don't see him, not for a while. And that, like, you know, maybe down the line at some point something else happens. But to me, this sort of feels like the groove that he'll be in is this spot. What do you think?
Yeah, he's a guy I would worry about if he was out on his own. Like, if the BCC ended today, I think that, you know, he would probably get lost in the shuffle pretty quickly. But that's not to say that would be the case 6 months from now or a year from now. It just depends on how things go. But I think Bryan Danielson really said it best tonight. I mean, he said it on commentary. Can you believe where Wheeler Yuta is at? I mean, would this guy be able to do what he's doing tonight a year and a half ago? And that was the perfect thing for Danielson to say, because the answer was clearly no. I mean, Yuta was a guy who was lost in the shuffle. And funny enough, we were talking about Layla Hirsch earlier and how she got injured at a Dynamite that I attended. That was also the infamous night where Jon Moxley and Wheeler Yuta had their Rampage match, where Moxley recruited Yuta. And so that was just over, you know, about 14 months ago or so. So coming up on a year and a half. And prior to that, I mean, I barely could have told you who Wheeler Yuta was outside of any other random face on the AEW roster. So Danielson was absolutely right. And I think it's a good spot for him. I also like that, you know, he has been the BCC's kind of fall guy in a lot of matches when they have taken losses, but they're trying to rectify that by giving him wins in crucial situations. So having him get the pin in Anarchy in the Arena felt like a big deal. I mean, not only because he gets the benefit of getting that pinfall, but I thought it was smart in the sense that when he covered, I didn't necessarily think the match was over, because I thought, oh, he's not going to be the one to get the pin.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Azan says, what do you think about the focus on the embassy during tonight's show? There's just too many factions who were not formed in the AEW canon narrative structure. And they do things outside of Dynamite proper. And then they show up and there's only so much heavy lifting Excalibur can do, a commentary or even a video package, if they bother to do that. So, I mean, I barely keep track of the factions that they have. And when they show up every now and then, I'm like, okay, what's the story here? Let me try to refresh my memory on this and what even counts in AEW versus what they've done elsewhere. So I, you know, just maybe Collision solves this, 'cause you know, the roster is split and, you know, each show There's more consistency with that extra couple hours of A programming. I don't like to compare it to Rampage. I think Rampage is just, it's a side bin of fun little matches that Tony wants to put together, but it's not, in its time slot and all that. It's just not, it's not considered a priority at any level close to Dynamite. I think Collision is going to be treated as an equal to Dynamite. Even if it doesn't achieve that, it will be treated as that.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about who we would like to see in a potential faction with Don Callis. And I think the indicator of how I feel about the Embassy is how I feel about a lot of the factions in AEW right now. Many of the names that we were mentioning for Don Callis's faction are already in factions, but they just don't matter. So
and there's not enough time to make them matter. It'd be too much of a sacrifice. There's important people. Like, look at how how SmackDown, features wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
They're on every week.
Yeah.
And you can say, oh, it's too much. It's burnout. I see Sheamus too much, or whatever. I get that. And that there's some give and take that happens, or there's positive and negatives in how you approach things. But there's something about building a weekly relationship with characters and. And, not to lean on Succession too much, and with the finale now, I'll talk about it less. But, you don't want to not have Tom and Greg on every episode of Succession. You can't go 4 weeks not having them on. You can maybe have Jerry not be on, every other episode if it's not pertinent for her to be there. But in wrestling, I think there's a real benefit the wrestlers on who you're pushing every week. And if not, they don't deserve to have a manager in a faction. Like, that's giving them too much if they're going to be on infrequently, because it just makes people go, who are these people and why are they a faction and what's their purpose? So I'd just rather not have a faction with – a faction implies they're relevant. And if they're relevant, they deserve to be on TV more often than some of these sidebar factions are, including Dark Order, by the way.
There's so many of them, and it's such a large roster that you bring up SmackDown and I mean, even Raw, you can use the same example with Raw. The thing is that you can go a week, you can see Sheamus on week one of SmackDown and then not see him week two, but he's probably going to be there week three or at the latest week four, because that's the size of the roster. And I think that is about what you want. Whereas on the AEW side, if you featured a wrestler A on week one of Dynamite, and you needed to then use every single wrestler you had under contract one time before featuring that wrestler again, it might be 5 weeks, 6 weeks before you saw that wrestler. And I just don't think that works when you're operating a single brand, and that's why a hard brand split would benefit them greatly, because you're going to cut the roster in half, which theoretically should half the amount of time that it takes to get a wrestler in rotation who might not be in a week-to-week story. So, yeah, that is a problem not just in the singles divisions, but also very much so in the factions, where there are so many and so few of them have a defined purpose or mission statement, or even a sense of camaraderie among them. In a lot of cases, it just feels like some guys that are thrown together for the sake of having a faction.
Yes, exactly. And a faction that's not introduced to the audience and isn't part of the weekly show,
mm-hmm.
and the viewership don't have a relationship with them, or don't have an investment in what they're doing, are going to feel like they're randomly thrown together, even if they're not. But if there's a backstory that happened in Japan or in ROH or in the indie scene or was covered on AEW Dark, there's too much of that in AEW. All right, finally, he goes, could you see Jungle Hook as the top babyface team in the future of AEW? I'm kind of with Jason Paul on this. In his report, he said that this could be the way that Jungle Boy turns heel. So they team, but not long term, and it actually turns into a major singles feud for Hook and a reason for Jungle Boy or the conduit for Jungle Boy to go heel and kind of move to the next stage of his career. What do you think, Brandon?
If they're going to do that, I think they need to rehab Hook significantly, because I don't think the level of interest is there the way that it was. I mean, if we were talking Hook 6 months ago,
and a half ago, it's been that long.
Man.
6 months ago, he was cold. A year and a half ago.
Okay.
He was the Dominic of late 2021, yeah.
Okay, so if you had Jungle Boy ready to turn heel on Hook from 18 months ago, I think that gets Jungle Boy a ton of heat. If it happens today or next week, I don't think, or even they team for a little while, I don't think it gets nearly the kind of reaction that you want it to. I actually, there was a moment tonight where I thought they were just going to pull the trigger right away, because Jungle Boy was holding onto the chair a little bit too long, and he kept like raising and lowering it in kind of an awkward way. And I don't know if it was an intentional red herring or just happened to be the way he was carrying the chair and kind of like sizing up the guys walking up the ramp. But Hook turned his back to Jungle Boy like two or three times. And every time I was like, are they gonna do it right here?
Well, I hope not, because what would be the explanation?
But I'm
with you. Like, I mean, it's whether it's intentional or not, it's kind of cool that that thought can be there based on also the story they told the pay-per-view, which is Jungle Boy had a chance and he didn't do it, and then he didn't win the world title. And but I think that should ruminate. I don't think it makes sense that Jack Perry would be like, all right, now I'm going to be a villain. That would just feel arbitrary.
And that's not the first time he's done that either. He did it with Christian too.
Yeah. Yep. So give us a story arc. I think Hook's a good opponent for it. But yeah, and when I say Hook was the Dominic of a year and a half ago, like late 2021, not like a red hot heel. I just mean the guy that everyone was like, oh my God, this guy just came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know, this green young wrestler is getting huge crowd reactions, and how did this happen? That kind of that kind of framing of it. Okay, a couple more emails, and then we'll wrap up here. Zach in Texas says, I thought Dynamite tonight proved any pronouncements or predictions of AEW's demise were greatly exaggerated. So take that, none of you who predicted AEW's demise. This was a great show. The matches all hit. Everyone had their working boots on, from Bandido to Big Bill. Every time I type Bill, I'm like, I don't want to write Bill as a name of a wrestler, but I can't type Big. And I'm not going to write Big Bill every time either. That's dumb. So I've got to just type his name's Bill. I don't know if it's worse than Mr. JL, but how freaking unimaginative. Although I love Taz going, you know, people wonder why they call him Big Bill. It's because his first name is Bill and he's big. I'm like, yes, if you're a third grader naming a stuffy for your pet, that's a good method. You know, like, Mr. Blue Nose. If you give a stuffed animal to a dog and it has a blue nose, you call him Mr. Blue Nose. That's not national television wrestling names, though.
It was the reverse WWE. They dropped the last name instead of the first.
All right. That Don Callis Takeshita segment was just incredible television. That was the loudest, longest sustained boos I've heard since the great Dominic. He didn't say that. He hates Dominic. But he said, I've heard since Roman beat The Undertaker. Well, that's because he hasn't been watching Dominic seed. Anyway, Zach, sorry, I got to needle you. Just tremendous. Oh, here it is. I know the Dominic reference in your report was tongue-in-cheek, but at least the heat on Callis is because people don't like him in the right way, as opposed to go-away heat Dom has. That is not true, Zach.
No.
Brandon, I don't want to be the one to push back on Zach. Push back on Zach for me, if he deserves
it. It's not go away heat.
Yeah.
It's tongue in cheek, but it's not go away. It's a very niche. Like I can't. Can you think of a wrestler who has gotten the kind of heat that Dominic is getting? It's not in the sense that like. Oh, the magnitude, the volume of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there probably is an example, but I'd have to just almost flip through pages of wrestling history to
Yeah.
You're right. It is in its own. It's not go away heat, but it is. You represent something that we find deplorable, and we are going to just lose our shit booing you because it's fun, but part of the reason we're here is because of you, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah,
like we're here to boo you, not we're booing you because the show would be better without you, and we don't know how else to express it. It's very so. All right, sorry Zach. So no, my reference Dominic was not tongue-in-cheek at all. In my written report. So with Shibata, Vikingo, and Zack Sabre Jr., Rampage is a must-see TV. Well, for super hardcore fans who know who they are. Shall we take bets now on how long before CM Punk implodes again? Because we all know it's not if, but when. No, we don't know that. We generally don't. Like, I mean, I am not going to lead the parade going CM Punk is misunderstood and he's not the problem. Because he's not misunderstood, unless you don't think it's his fault. And he is the problem. But and I don't think he's capable of completely reinventing himself. But all that said, like, with the right leadership, separate and you know, keeping them apart from the other people, I think that everybody wakes up every day with yesterday affecting who they are today. And it's usually incremental. But sometimes there's big things that happen and you wake up and you're like, I'm a very different person today because of a tragedy, a triumph, a world event. You broke your leg and all your plans are off, so you have to completely shift your goals for the next few months while you heal. Like, there's just things that happen. Punk had that moment. So the Punk we saw have the meltdown, that unhinged meltdown at the media Q&A and even the social media outburst, that could be a different guy can show up on June 17th because it had ramifications that threatened his ability to come back and prove himself, that threatened his ability to actually continue to earn his contract. So let's just take into account circumstances might have changed enough that he won't implode. So when you say it's not if but when, I think that's overstating it. Is it likely? Maybe that's overstating it. Is it a distinct possibility? Oh, yeah. It's a distinct possibility, more with him than almost anybody else on the roster. Don't get me wrong. But it's not inevitable. I don't like giving up on people. Or I don't like saying, you know, things are inevitable. And I don't think it is with CM Punk, with Phil Brooks. I think what he's been through since All In and or All Out and what has happened even in the last couple of months could have led to conversations with lawyers, with confidants, with friends, with his boss. And he might be at a place where he can show up. And, you know, like, think about how different 2023 is for MJF than 2022. You know, MJF's not playing all those games that he played last year. That just didn't work. A lot of people wonder if it's a shoot or a work. It'll be legendary. Whatever that was, it didn't work. Cody is a completely different promo in WWE than he was in AEW. Not completely different. It's different in very pertinent ways. More focused, purposeful, on track. And it's brilliant and it's working. And it's in a way not all that different than what he did in AEW, but it's different enough in key significant ways that, and he's in a better circumstance for that type of character to be over, that it works. So I want to leave room for that for Punk. I don't want to have a fatalistic attitude. Brandon.
Yeah, I agree. I was a huge CM Punk fan. I think his return to AEW, the original return in 2021 is one of my favorite moments that I have experienced in pro wrestling in a very, very long time. And I enjoyed a lot of what we got out of him during that run. I think that I don't think anyone is wrong to write off CM Punk in the sense that, like, you just don't want to see him on your wrestling show anymore because the drama is too much for you. But I think it's an accountability conversation. Everyone has certain thresholds of what they are willing to accept in their pastime and their entertainment. Just like, you know, in music, there are a lot of questionable parties and people in the music industry, and you can choose whether or not you want to support them. I don't think that CM Punk's transgressions rise to the level of the conversations that we're usually having about accountability. But if you think that Punk is just, you know, a prick and someone who doesn't deserve attention anymore, I understand that. I am more in the camp of, you know, as long as he is not outwardly racist, homophobic, etc., you know, run the gamut, of which there has never been any indication that Punk is any of those things. In fact, he is someone who has time and time again stood, you know, in direct opposition of those kinds of things.
Sometimes the degree of being suspiciously virtue signaling. But there's a little bit of, you know, where the skeptic might go, okay, you know, he's doing it as part of the brand or
sure,
because he thinks he has some attention. And that's a cynical view on him. I think in his heart, you're right. But I think sometimes it can be amplified. I'm pointing out for people who might be thinking at what I'm saying as you're saying it. There are people a little cynical about it sometimes.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. I think that the qualms that people have with CM Punk are perfectly valid, but to me they do boil down to disagreements with coworkers over take your pick, any number of things. And some of those issues are, you know, valid to some people, to some people they don't matter. But think that CM Punk is necessarily a person who is just completely trapped in the body of who he was 10 years ago when he walked out of WWE and is the same guy who walked in to AEW in 2021, who is the same guy as the one who had a meltdown at a press conference, who is the same guy as the Punk we're about to see in a few weeks at Collision. I think there is room for improvement and growth in all of those steps and change. And sometimes the change isn't good, but it doesn't, you know, he is still obviously capable of change. And I think until we see proof that he is not capable of working in this environment again, we can't jump to the conclusion that it's going to happen.
And he can also be the same person who hasn't changed, but simply have the incentive or the idea in his head. It sounds condescending to say impulse control, but like be in a position now where he's the same person, but he makes a different choice at a fork in the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't have to compromise who he is to make a different choice at some forks in the road. And if in essence that it can be sort of a mentor or a friend or whoever, or a book he's reading or a John Cena quote. John Cena has a book out of a bunch of inspirational quotes. I saw Barnes & Noble the other day. I was like, wow, I flipped through it. I was like, you know, half of these are really trite and the other half are like, you know, actually pretty good. But like if, you know, if he's like, okay, I'm forking the road, my indication was swerve left, but now I'm going to steer right and more thoughtfully. He can be the same person, have the same values, but just handle things differently. And that's what I'm saying is maybe these last, you know, 8 months have done that, or 9 months, you know, maybe it's just going to be, he'll handle things differently. All right.
I think I know people who are like Punk in the sense that they come off really ornery and unfriendly, and I mean pick any of those adjectives that you want to people who don't know them or who that person has perceived the other person has done them wrong.
Yeah.
But yet that person is also someone who, if you're in their circle, if you have gotten into their world, people don't have a bad word to say about you and think you're the nicest guy that's ever existed. I know people like that, and that seems to be the way of CM Punk.
Yeah.
People who are in his circle, who know him intimately, who haven't, you know, of course, there's a huge caveat there because there is the Colt Cabana story.
Mm-hmm.
But people who are in his circle and in his good graces have nothing but great things to say about him. And you even hear that within the confines of his run with AEW. You hear from FTR, for example. There are women who have come out and said how great Punk was to the women's locker room, how he brought, was it coffee and donuts? He would bring the whole women's locker room or something like that.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. He was bringing stuff for the women, just, you know, for spirits and camaraderie and whatnot. So he has that person in him. It's a matter of whether or not the person, I think people perceive Punk to be out in his normal life, in his everyday life, if that person can show up to work, or the work version of Punk is kind of the one that you get. Because you hear the same thing about people who have met Punk too, just fans of his who have met him like in a place where he doesn't want to be bothered and he's awful. And then the next day you hear of someone who happened to see Punk on the street in Chicago and they were like, he was the nicest guy ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Punk's complicated.
Yeah. He's a, I mean, so clearly, I mean, just a very, very complex character.
Yeah. I mean, I know people who know him way better than I know him, and that colors how I frame, you know, my analysis of him. And I hear from people who on a wide spectrum, you know, I talk to people on a wide spectrum, but people who knew him for a long time, haven't known him for very long, like him, don't like him, whatever. And I mean, you come away, he's different, he's complicated. And there's a different set of rules for him than really, you know, sort of say Dominic has a unique kind of heat. Punk's just, you know, he's different. It just, you know, flat out, he's different. There's baggage, there's issues, there's personality traits, there's impulses, there's convictions that he has that just you have to handle differently if you're Tony Khan, and you have to, frankly, have to absorb differently if you're a colleague. And not everyone's willing to do that, and I'm not judging them for not doing it. You know, but either way, you know, I mean, sometimes it's like, no, I'm not gonna. I'm an adult. He's an adult. I'm not gonna accommodate his quirks, not even shortcomings, just quirks, you know. Mm-hmm. Not every adult in a work environment has to adjust to someone who is as off the beaten path as Punk is in certain key ways that lead to all the controversy. All right, we'll wrap up here with rapid fire answers to JB's six questions, although he cheated, he has two fives, but you're not tricking me, JB, it's six. One, hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Judging from what we saw tonight, is most of the Forbidden Door build this year going to be on Rampage? I'd honestly be okay with that strategy. I don't think so. You can't sell a paper. Well, I guess you could. I mean, maybe the people who ordered Forbidden Door are going to order it again, whether it's hyped on Dynamite or not. But I wouldn't mind if Rampage became like the headquarters of Forbidden Door hype. But you gotta, you know, your top stars are going to be on Forbidden Door, and your top stars can't have a completely separate universe on Rampage than what's on Dynamite, Brandon.
Yeah, I just got the sense that they weren't doing it tonight because they wanted to really hone in on the fallout from Double or Nothing, but next week they'll kind of start to go in heavy. I mean, the thing with AEW is they rarely build their pay-per-views up until a couple weeks before the show anyway, at least putting the card together.
Yeah.
So they've got like 3 weeks or so of TV before they get to Forbidden Door, so they've got plenty of time. I'm not looking forward to the next few weeks of television. This is sort of my Survivor Series in AEW with the brand warfare and whatnot.
I hope they can make it more integrated. In at least, you know, three out of the top five matches can feel very much in the canon of AEW, and not just, you know, this cyber thing. All right, number two.
Because they've also got All In coming out, and they're talking about that bringing in names from outside the company as well. So you've kind of got like a second Forbidden Door on the horizon. Also find it interesting that All In, this is an entirely different conversation. We don't have to go down the road of it, but the fact that All In is not a pay-per-view.
Tony is not saying yet.
Yeah.
He's not saying yet. So it might just still be maybe I'll end up on Max, maybe not.
Well, I can offer you this bit of information. Fight TV, which is, of course, for those who don't know, the international pay-per-view provider for AEW, was offering in conjunction with Double or Nothing this weekend, they were offering a slight discount if you purchased all 2023 remaining pay-per-views for AEW together.
Mm-hmm.
And that included a package of four, including Double or Nothing, Forbidden Door, All Out, and Full Gear.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think All In's going to be a traditional pay-per-view. I don't – but I don't know what that means otherwise. I mean, I texted Tony Khan the day All In got announced, and he didn't respond. But, I mean, he doesn't – very selective on certain things to respond to for legal reasons, or, as he said at his media Q&A – last week leading into the pay-per-view, just he wants to do it on his clock. He's got his thing. And that might mean he didn't want to get in the way of Forbidden Door and get, you know, have people choose. Or it could be they're still trying to figure out a distribution method, and it could be a standalone pay-per-view, and he's going to put it out exclusively on Blu-ray for everyone else or something. VHS maybe. All right.
Well, he did say you'll be able to watch it live. So I guess that.
Well, yeah,
that
if you travel to London.
No. You will be able to watch it on television live.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm being facetious, but Blu-ray and DVD. But if he's going to be circumspect, is that the right about it and not provide details, then I'm going to wildly speculate until we get a good answer. All right, number
that's
two.
That's going to go all over Twitter, you know. Wade Keller says All Out will be exclusively available on Blu-ray and DVD.
Even the aggregators desperate to get their freelance pay on Thursday are not going to do that. Run with that. All right, take six. I'm trying to get to number two here, Brandon. Let's stay focused here. It's on both of us here. I was skeptical. Oh, it was fun, though. I was skeptical about waiting all this time for Statlander to come back to win the TBS title off Jade, but she seemed to get a really good reaction tonight. Perhaps she was the right call, and the wait was worth it. I don't know. We largely covered that already. Fans like Statlander. Do they like her as a centerpiece act? I think they are willing to if she's treated as one and she performs as one. And part of that is going to be having a better character and being more relatable, knowing who she is and you know, carrying herself like an alpha main eventer, which I frankly don't think she quite reached before.
Yeah, just don't let her disappear. I mean, that's really the key is make sure she's part of the show.
And don't, like, boop people or whatever that was. Don't be an alien. I'm thinking of all the dumb things that people have done. You know, like, don't have some, like, you know, don't have her put her hands in her pocket. Don't have her – what are all the indie-rific gimmicks that AEW's, you know, had people do? Like just if you want somebody to be a big star, like, they can't – come or best friends. Everybody – give the people what they want. Like, stop it. It's like – it's even worse than Bullet Club, you know, in terms of being derivative and too clubhousey. So let's move away from all that. It's like kind of what I say about Punk. Like, don't let the past decide what you're going to do in the future. Don't assume knowledge. Take her assets, her strengths, and build on that in front of a million people. Don't worry about what you did in the past. All right. Number three, do you think the mixed tag main event was a bit backwards? Shouldn't we have gotten the mixed tag first and then singles matches between both Jericho and Cole and Saray and Britt secondarily? Nah, I think it's fine either way.
Yeah, I was fine with it. And I actually thought, you know, for the purpose of crowd reaction, for getting everyone involved in a good spot, I thought tonight worked better than the pay-per-view did.
On number four, I like that Wheeler. Yeah, I agree. I like that Wheeler Yuta got the pin at Anarchy in the Arena, and tonight they seem to be revving him up. Do you think they have bigger plans for him in the near future? All right, we also kind of covered that. They might have bigger plans for him in the future, but I think they're just cognizant of having him seem like the Buddy Roberts of the Freebirds. You know, the guy who you just know is going to be doing the job in the team. And I like that they're breaking us from that expectation.
Yeah, he definitely had been the fall guy. So,
yeah.
I mean, resetting the stage a little bit is a good thing.
Yeah, or, you know, X-Pac in a three-man house show, NWO. Yeah. number five, can Hangman finally be separated from the Dark Order? It's like a year or more past due. Do you think they're building to a team match there? Hopefully that ends it once and for all. I don't want to see Hangman in the Bloodline or Bloodline in the Dark Order. Talking about polar opposites in a storyline, but I also don't like storylines not having a conclusion. So if they have something in mind and they can get a TV match out of it and have some sort of resolution, then I'm fine with it as sort of a one-off.
Yeah. If you're going to do it quick, get it over with, make sure it's definitive and Paige wins and moves on. I never liked his involvement with them. Thought it brought him down. I thought it was a mistake when he was in the world title picture to have him clowning around with Dark Order. I don't think it's good for his character. So yeah, the quicker they can get through it, wrap it up and move on, the better.
And finally, he says, I predict we'll get FTR versus Bullet Club Gold and then FTR versus Hardys at All In as their next two major programs. I think FTR and Hardys at All In, it's a novelty match, and that's good. I have no problem with if Jeff can not fall off the top rope.
That's the key.
Yeah. Then that's the type of match that you'd want, a dream match of sorts with a legendary team, you know, that can help maybe, you know, fill that stadium even more. You know, I still like MJF against Sting as the title match with potential retirement ramifications. You know, just things that feel special and a little different than what would be on a just US-based pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, especially, like, I know last time I was on this, we talked about the MJF and Sting idea, and I think it was predicated mostly on the idea that you'd have to have a big, you know, wrestling-focused semi-main or something, you know, a big match for Kenny Omega, something along those lines. But yeah, I mean, the Hardys against FTR works. I think that's probably at this stage of the game, I think that Jeff would probably be in the best hands working with a team like FTR. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like I would trust Cash and Dax to really take care of him and make him look good. But yeah, I mean, I just worry for Hardy involved in anything really at this point. Just doesn't it really just doesn't feel like he should be out there.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Brandon, anything else in your notes from Dynamite tonight before we sign off here?
The only thing I was going to add was the start to that Hook and Jungle Boy segment that we touched on a little bit.
Yes.
The fact that, again, you had heels who barely appear on television coming out and saying that we are never given opportunities, we are never on TV.
Uh-huh.
Don't do that. I mean, like, you're drawing attention to the chief complaint about AEW. I mean, they not only do it on their television, they built one of the biggest storylines of their entire reality show around the fact that wrestlers could not get booked consistently.
Mm-hmm.
It's baffling. I mean, like,
and
why?
It's just lazy. I mean, it means you have producers backstage producing interviews who just aren't, you know, who are giving or aren't vetoing ideas or putting forth these lame things that are just overplayed and don't really fit in the narrative.
And not only that, but if you're going to draw attention to something that is inside baseball, at least be fully aware of it and be on the road to correcting it. They're not.
Yes.
They're not, and they never have been. That's the issue.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Well put. All right, very good, Brandon. Thank you. I appreciate your analysis tonight.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of fun. Always always glad to do it.
Check out Brandon's reports from this weekend on the pay-per-views at pwtorch.com, and we'll have you on again probably for a Raw or SmackDown, Brandon, coming up. But we'll do AEW again too. Hopefully sooner than later.
Sounds good.
Great. Thanks. Thanks everybody. We'll talk to you next on the flagship tomorrow on our Blue Logo show.